What is the unbreakable bond which will help you survive and thrive through cancer or many other adversities in life? That's the theme of today's episode number 37 of the Cancer and Comedy Podcast, where we talk with the author of How I Survived the Killing Fields, Sarah Eim. I'm Dr. Brad Miller, and I have survived a cancer diagnosis and am thriving in my own right, and I'm here to help you do the same. And part of what helped me to do that was learning how to laugh and to turn the grim of cancer into the joy of living a fulfilled life. I'm here to combine my love of laughter with my 43 years of pastoral experience and my doctoral degree in transformational leadership to help you. In today's episode, if you want to learn one of the profound secrets to surviving and thriving through an adversity in life, an unbreakable bond, then this is the podcast for you. So listen on, my friend. Listen on.
Cancer got you down? Pretty grim, huh? How about a show that turns the grim into a grin? Way to go. You made it here to the Cancer and Comedy Podcast, the show to lift you up with hope and humor that heals.
Hey there, Lifter Uppers. I'm Deb Creer, the co-host of Cancer and Comedy, where our mission is to heal cancer-impacted people through hope and humor, something we like to call turning the grim into a grin. Thank you so much for joining our conversation today as we talk about unbreakable bonds, sisterhood in survival. This is the episode where you will be inspired by an incredible story of survival against incredible odds. Now, here is the host of Cancer and Comedy, Dr. Brad Miller.
Hey, hey, hey. Thank you, Deb. Appreciate you so much. Indeed, this is the podcast, Cancer and Comedy, where we look to take the grim of cancer or other serious situations in life, and we like to transform it into the grin of celebrating life with a smile. So what we're all about is developing a community of people helping one another face cancer and other debilitating situations to cope with hope. And we're here to get people connected to our cancer and comedy community. And we'd like to invite people to do that by going to our website, cancerandcomedy.com/follow. So, Deb, I got a couple of dad jokes for you. I like to do that. I know it's a big surprise. And today there's a theme. There's a theme. And I don't know if you play the game Scrabble or not, but it's a Scrabble themed couple of jokes here. So yesterday I saw a guy spill his Scrabble letters on the road. I asked him, hey, what's the word on the street? Then my dog ate a whole bunch of Scrabble tiles for days.
Oh, no.
For days, he kept leaving little messages around the house.
Cute.
Oh, boy.
Well, we're going to get a little bit serious now. And today on Cancer and Comedy, our guest is Sarah Eim, who is the author of How I Survived the Killing Fields, a story of hope, love, and determination. You can find her at sarahim.com. That's SARAIM.com. Sarah has an absolutely incredible story of hope, love, perseverance, faith, family, and courage.
Well, Deb, this was an amazing interview, conversation I was able to have with Sarah here recently. Her book describes her overall experience, where she says she escaped, How I Survived the Killing Fields. And that's not a metaphor. That's a literal situation that she went through. Some people who are students of history will remember this, but there was in the country of Cambodia, they had a terrible, terrible situation where many, many people were the victims of a terrible, horrible dictator who literally murdered in a terrible way and took people into horrible situations, many, many, many thousands of people. And it was just a terrible thing that happened there, and she was caught up in this apocalyptic type of situation where she was removed from her home in the city where she was going to college, ended up in the fields, and went through a terrible situation where her life was threatened many times and many people lost their lives. And it's a story of how she went through this experience, escaped it with hope and a sense of family, but also I think it's going to be something important for us to touch on here today, a sense of camaraderie and sisterhood with some people she went through the experience with. And so I don't want to give away too much more, but I just wanted to see in your life, when we go through bad things in life, it's good to have somebody to commiserate with who's having some similar experience. Would you agree with that? And maybe you can share a little bit of your experience.
I do. You know, it is so important that we gather those people around us, you know, so that we don't feel alone, because I think sometimes in these situations, we do feel terribly alone. And Sarah's story is absolutely incredible because there were women that went through what she went through. They all went through it together, you know, and we'll let her tell about that in the interview, but they all helped and supported each other also. And I think that was so important, you know, and we hear stories about that all the time, you know, whether it was, say, people in concentration camps, or more importantly, you know, what we're talking about frequently with us is, you know, maybe it's somebody who is, you know, they diagnosed at kind of the same time or with cancer, or they were in treatment, you know, and so you got to know them there. And I think it really does talk about how we kind of build these very unusual but very strong bonds with people when we're faced with adversity.
I think one of the things I want to just kind of reflect on just a second with you here is the cancer I deal with is prostate cancer, which is all men, of course. And the cancer you deal with is breast cancer, which does affect men, but it's, you know, majority women impacted by that. So in my case, I just know that there's a fair number of men that I know in my life or have been connected with who've had to deal with it. And so a couple good personal friends, as a matter of fact. And so it's been good to have those type of conversations, just kind of guy talk, if you will, if you'll allow me that, to talk about it a little bit about, you know, some of the implications of that. And that's been a helpful thing to go through. And I know that there's a really, you know, with Komen for the Cure and many other things, there is a really strong bond in the breast cancer community. Can you maybe speak to that for just a second there?
You know, there definitely is a huge sisterhood with breast cancer. I think all we have to do is see a pink ribbon and we know exactly what is going on. You know, whether it's that they've got it on a shirt, they've got a pin, you know, they have a tattoo, right? All of these various things. We see that pink ribbon and we know immediately that either that person had breast cancer or they know someone who did and they are supporting them. And it's kind of like, you know, we see them and we immediately know, ooh, sister.
Yeah, that's awesome. That's awesome. So that's a big part of what we're going to talk about today with Sarah M. And I just want you to know just slightly more about her before we get into the interview, that she has this book, How I Survived the Killing Fields. We'll put the links to that in our show notes. And her mission is to inspire, motivate, and encourage people to have hope and resilience and a positive perspective on their life. And she does that not only through her book, but through her teaching and through her lectures and through her influence that she has in many different communities. And she talks about how God gave her the courage to attempt something dangerous, and she trusted her friends to help her do it, and it made all the difference in her life, and she has that story to tell to be inspirational to others. And so I look forward to having this conversation. You can certainly find her website at sarahim.com. Look forward to having her.
Oh, it's going to be incredible. And following the interview, you're going to want to stick around for, yep, there's more, Dr. Brad's Bad Joke of the Day. And then, of course, our Faith It or Break It segment. Do you know, we'd love for you to be a part of the cancer and comedy community, where together we crush cancer with a message of how to cope with hope and humor. Please follow Cancer and Comedy at cancerandcomedy.com/follow. Now, here's Dr. Brad's conversation with Sarah M.
Sarah, welcome. Welcome to our conversation here today.
Thank you so much for having me, Brad.
It is indeed an honor and a privilege to have you with me to be able to share your story here and of what happened to you in the past and how you were now going through the recovery process and be able to offer this a message of hope to others. But one of the things I just want to ask you right off the bat, though, Sarah, is just tell me something that's happened in your life relatively recently that's give you some hope, give you something to smile about, give you something to feel good about. What's something happened to you in your personal life or maybe in your professional life that's been a good thing for you?
Something recently, a good thing is that I'm healthy, continue to be healthy, and just move to a new lifestyle, move into a condo living, and we just downsize and I think this is a very good transition for us, for me and my husband. So I'm settled in and ready to enjoy life.
So you made a transition in life to you're at a pretty good place now. You got good health, and you moved into a condo, and you're moving into another phase of life, and that's all good, and we celebrate that with you. But you've had various other transitions in your life, haven't you? Some very dramatic. And tell us a little bit, tell us about your country of tell our audience a little bit about your country of origin and just a little tiny bit about your growing up life before we get into your dramatic story.
Yes, I grew up in Cambodia. My family live in the village far away from the city, and our lifestyle is very simple but satisfying. My parents are farmers, and I enjoy the nature, the lifestyle, and the lifestyle in the countryside in Cambodia is very simple. It's so simple that you wouldn't believe it, but it's very peaceful, and especially me, they express their love, and it just...
That's wonderful. So you had a relatively peaceful, and in many ways, your growing up years sound pretty nice, pretty peaceful, and pretty idyllic in many ways. Is that a fair thing to say? Your growing up years?
Yeah, that's fair. And I am the firstborn child. And as firstborn child got spoiled a little bit, but yeah. Doing okay.
And good.
Yeah, my parents appreciate higher education. They want me to keep going in school and never become a farmer again.
Okay. So that was part of the aspiration, at least when you're growing up, to become, to get your education and to go on to college and things of that nature and to not be a farmer, as part of what I'm hearing you say. So that's the kind of the track you are on, as it were. You were tracking to continue your education, having a good lifestyle, good life growing up. Then things changed dramatically in your country, didn't they? And a lot of people, Americans and people around the world are not quite as familiar with what happened in Cambodia, but tell us a little bit about what happened in your country that led to just a really horrible time. Tell us a little bit about the background there.
Yes. In the early 70s, I graduated from high school and went off to college. So I left my family behind. And my colleague was in the capital city. And that, in 1975, a very bad thing happened to Cambodia when the communist Khmer Rouge took over the country. They came in as a military takeover. They drove the truck, the tank, and their soldier marching on the street into the capital city. It was very scary, and I did not know what to do, but they know what to do. They came in, they shut down the country, and they start to evacuate people.
You witnessed this. You were living in the capital city when this all happened. Is that right?
Yes, capital city, in the apartment, and they came in, and they shut down the country. So when they shut down, it's not a partial shutdown like in the United States. It's a complete shutdown.
Okay.
So that means there is no marketplace, there's no bank, no post office, no transportation. So that...
Everything stopped.
Everything stopped. That means I cannot go home.
And you, does this mean your college was shut down as well? And so you couldn't go home and you couldn't do anything. Is that right?
Yes, the college was shut down. I could not go home back to my family. And then they evacuate everybody from the city.
But when you say they evacuate everybody from the city, they really tried to depopulate the city to the countryside or someplace else?
Yeah.
My goodness.
Yeah, they don't want anybody to live in the city anymore.
Okay. So what did that mean? Were you part of this process? Were you moved out of wherever you were living at out to the countryside somewhere? Or tell me how that actually worked out for you, a little bit of how that came down when it actually happened that you had to actually move. You had to get up and go. How did that actually happen?
I had to immediately get my clothes and food, a little bit of food, put in a little small bag that I can carry, and then get out from my apartment. And then we keep walking. Everybody walk on the street, a crowded street, without knowing where to go. But I just follow the crowd, and I know that we have to go away from the city. So we all head out to a different road that lead to the countryside. So you
were not assigned a place to go, or so to speak. You just had to get out of the city. Is that what I'm understanding?
We had to get out of the city. And
then really bad things started to happen then, didn't they?
Very bad thing. And we don't have a place to sleep. We don't have food to eat. We eat a little bit the food that we took from our own place. And once when we finish that food, that's over. There's no market, no restaurant that we can get more. That we keep going. We sleep on the ground. And when we need to take a shower, we go into the river.
Okay.
Go into the river and dip ourselves in the water and keep walking.
Just keep walking with no apparent destination other than out of the city. Is that kind of how the feeling was? You just had to keep moving?
That's correct. We would just keep moving.
And things went from bad to worse. Is that right? I know your health, you had some health problems yourself. Is that right?
Yeah, later on, during the walk, I was okay. But I was crying miserably. I miss my family. In our life, when things happen, everything that is bad happened to us, we want to be close to family. In my case, my family is far away, and we cannot reach to each other. We don't know what happened to each other.
Mm-hmm. So no contact at all, no letters or phone calls or anything along that line, I assume?
No, not at all. And then finally, we end up in a village far away from the city. When we got there, they give us a temporary place to stay with somebody in their home. And they pull us to work right away. They send us to go to work in the rice field.
What was that like to work in the rice field? You said you came from a farm background, but this sounds like this was a very difficult and just horrible circumstance.
Yeah, I grew up in the farm area, but my parents did not groom me to become a farmer.
I see.
I have no idea. I have no idea what to do when they push me to go to the rice field. I just watch everybody, what do they do? I'm just so trembling. I fear for my life because these people, these communist people, they don't like the city people.
Okay.
They do this, they evacuate. Their goal is to punish all of us. They want to clean up the country. They want to get rid of the people that are not useful to them. Myself is not useful to them because I don't know to do. I don't know to do the farming. But through my patience and my compliance, I try to follow the instruction and try to do my best not to get killed because I can get killed if I don't follow them.
So you said you could have been killed, and indeed a lot of people were killed. Is that the case?
Yeah. Yes. At the beginning, they took away the people that have some knowledge, that have education, that have high ranking in the previous government. They put them in the truck and they drove away. We never see them again.
And they were killed? Is that what you understand?
They were killed. Yeah, I have many friends that lost their loved one that way, because when they took their father or their husband away from them, they never see them again.
What an incredibly heart-wrenching and tragic circumstance that they went through, and everybody must have been going through. And you were, as you say in your book, these were some dark days. These were some bad times, but it went from bad to worse, didn't it? Is that kind of how it went for you?
Yeah, it kept getting worse and worse. And then from there, they transport me to a different place. They want to distribute people because some people, nobody there. So they want to bring us to the place where not many people live. So I got transported to another region. And then finally, I end up in the forced labor camp.
Oh, my goodness.
The camp, that one camp that I was in, was for single men and women.
Okay.
That means we are the strongest force. They can put us to work as much as they can.
So you were, just to clarify, you were a young woman at this time, early 20s, is that right? It helped.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay.
So you
were in a forced labor camp because you were the younger, stronger ones, and you were able to do, it sounds to me, some pretty heavy duty manual labor. Is that right?
Yeah. We were put in this camp, 1,000 of us, single men and women, and they put us to work in the rice field again in the intense sun. The sun in Cambodia is very hot, and we worked there all day long from very early in the morning, like 4 o'clock. They woke us up at 4. And then we went to the field all the way until nighttime. By the time we got back to sleep, it's pretty close to midnight.
Wow.
So as you can see, it's very long hours in the heat, and we were starved and exhausted. They give us very little food, and we were exhausted.
So just to be clear, just to be understood, kind of the circumstances, you're out in the fields, you're not really trained to do this, you're out in the hot sun for hours and hours, hard manual labor, stooping over and other things. I don't think, if I'm understanding you correctly, there was not like a lot of whatever, machinery or anything like this. You were doing manual labor, hot sun, not enough to eat, and were there like armed guards and this type of thing? Or was there, were you being oppressed at the same time?
Yeah.
It sounds like a recipe for disaster. Did some people get sick or even lose their lives out there in those circumstances?
Yes, definitely. There are armed guards watching us everywhere. So we cannot run away. We cannot go anywhere. They're watching us all the time. Mm-hmm. So we just went down all day long to plant the rice during the rice season. Mm-hmm. And during the harvest, we harvest the rice. But in between, when we are not working in the rice field, they send us to dig the canal, to build the dam, to dig the canal. They just find all kind of heavy work for us to do.
Oh my God.
Non-stop.
So eventually you're in this horrible situation and people are losing their health and their lives. You got sick yourself. I understand you got some sort of a disease that sapped your strength. Did you ever find yourself fearing that maybe some sort of feeling like I might be next? I might lose my life next, or I might be in bad shape. Did those type of thoughts ever cross your mind?
I never thought about that. I keep thinking, I only think one day at a time.
Okay.
I cannot plan that far, but my mind is thinking about my family.
Okay.
My mom had an accident about 5 years before all this happened. She was paralyzed. She lay down flat on her back for more than 4 years.
Oh my goodness.
And I was her caregiver because I'm the oldest child. So that kind of built the bond between me and my mom. Mm-hmm. That's why I was so attached to her when this bad thing happened. I wish I can go home and help out.
Mm-hmm. Of course. You're in this situation. You're in working in the fields, what's come to be known as the Killing Fields. There was a movie came out back in the mid-80s called The Killing Fields. I remember watching that movie very much. And there is basically oppression and disease and death all around you. And you said you still kept the vision of your mother needing to help her and of your family and one day at a time. Those sounds like some pretty, all things considered, some pretty good coping skills to deal with it, and all things considered. And yet the day came when you found a way, and this went on for years, right? You were in this basic situation for years. Then you finally escaped. Is that right? Tell me a little bit about how that all came about.
My first escape is escape out of the infirmary. When I got too sick to work in the field, they sent me to the infirmary. They said it's a hospital, but they not a hospital. It's infirmary. People went there waiting for their time to die. So I woke up very quickly. I realized that I should not stay there. Mm-hmm. I need to do something. There where I pray, I pray to God to ask him to help me to survive. So if God give me an idea that I need to sneak out, I sneak out, I escape out of the infirmary, and I end up meeting somebody who is so kind, and she arranged for me to work, to help out in the kitchen.
Okay.
That's a very fortunate for me.
So there was moments, even in the midst of all this horrible situation, there was a kind person and a helpful person who was there for you. That's awesome. That's awesome.
Yeah. So from there.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
From there, I regained my health a little bit. I get more energy. I feel a little bit better. I was not as sick as I used to be. And for months, I stayed there until I feel much better. And then they pulled me back. They pushed me to work in the rice field again. I work in the field again. So for the time that I worked altogether, there were about 4 years.
You worked in the fields for about 4 years and you escaped the one time and then you got sent back and then you escaped again. Is that right?
That's right.
Scary. This is scary stuff. It really is, Sarah, for anybody to think about this situation, be in this kind of circumstance, and then to escape that had to be scary in and of itself. And I just admire that so much. And so what do you think are some of the things that kept you going? What do you mean by that? What are some of the actions you either took for your physical health or for your mental health or for your spiritual health? What are some of the things you did to keep you going during that 4 years?
I have hope. I never give up hope. For some reason, I was a little bit of naive, thinking that things might change. I never thought about getting killed or anything like that. I'm just hoping that it will change. And another thing that helped me is I built a friendship. The woman in the camp, we were helping each other. So we can call it a sisterhood. Without my god sister in the camp helping me, I would be in a worse shape.
Sure. Hey, my friend, I just wanted to share with you that here on Cancer and Comedy, we have a special gift for you that's going to help you if you're impacted by cancer in your life and you want to do something about it. It's our free course. We call it the HHH or Triple H course, which stands for Healing Through Hope and Humor. It helps you to develop your cancer coping credo, a statement that's going to help you get through that. It's a free course. Just takes you. It's a 5 short sessions. It's all audio. You can get that free course at cancerandcomedy.com/free. You've also mentioned that you prayed to God to give you strength and to help you to navigate all this situation. Tell me a little about your spiritual walk in this whole setting here, Sarah. What I mean by that is some people, when they have bad things happen to them, they can really get into a state of being, whether you're spiritually or dry or spiritually in a bad place. Was your spirituality, was it enhanced or was it depressed during this time? Or tell me a little bit about that aspect of how you, of your life.
My spiritual stage is enhanced because I know I have a limitation. I cannot do much. I cannot run away. I'm so weak, so sick. And I depend on God to help me. So that's why I pray. If you cannot do much for yourself, you are about to die. You will cry out for help. That's what I did. I cried out for help. Cried out for help from my God sister and help from God. Whatever I can think of, I pray and I cry out and I need help. So I'm not ready to give up my life because my goal is to survive. Do anything to survive so I can go back home to find my family.
Sure. So you had a big motivator. I'm hearing you had, you were not ready to give up. You had your sister, your sisterhood that you had sustaining your relationships, and you had your faith in God and this overall drive to see your family again, your mother particularly. So you had some big drives there, didn't you? And these are what I'm getting at here about some of the actions, the factors that came into play here. And that's awesome. So what do you think you, and then I'm still interested in the story about how you actually eventually got out and broke free of this. Tell me how that happened when you finally escaped and able to get back to some, to find your family again. Did that happen eventually?
Yes. When they moved the camp toward the end of 4 years, they moved the camp to the jungle. Every 2 weeks, we keep pack up and move. Pack up and move, and I realized we are moving to the jungle. And I realized, oh no, when they move us into the jungle, that's far away from the national road. The national road is the hope that I can go on that road to my province to find my family. So when they move us away from that national road, I realized that I need to escape.
So that was your opportunity when they were moving your camp to the jungle. It was right by the national road and you were able to slip away in one form or another from the group or the guards and to make your way home. Is that
No, it happened a little bit longer. I did not pull the trigger soon enough. So I'm in the jungle and then I realized that I need to plan the escape. So I talked to three of my good friends, my sisterhood. Yes. Three of them, I asked them to escape with me because I was too frail. I was so sick. I cannot do it by myself. Again, I grabbed out. I reached out to get help from my friend. And also I pray.
Yes.
And we were waiting until nighttime. That is a lot easier to escape. So at nighttime, the jungle is so dark.
Sounds scary. My goodness. Wow.
It's so scary. And we don't know where to go, where to turn. But we are going to do it anyway. So we just make sure that the God does not see us. The nighttime is not easy for anybody to see anything. So we sneak out at night and we hold hands and we just keep going, keep walking. It was really scary.
Wow. So you eventually made your way through the jungle to a road or something like this? How did that play out?
We keep walking until finally we got out from the jungle and we got to the village.
Okay.
Got to the village. And when the day come, when the sun rose, we turned back and we did not see them. We did not see the armed guard and everything. We know that we are free.
Wow. What that must have been both a scary but also an exhilarating moment. Is that fair?
Yeah, it is.
Did all four of you manage to make it to the village?
Yeah, we made it.
That's awesome. And then from there you started your life one way or another. You found your family again, is that right?
Yeah, my three friends went with me all the way until my hometown, and we tracked down my family. My home that we used to live, they destroyed the home.
Oh my goodness.
So I had to track down to find my family, and finally we did it.
Mm. That must have been an incredible moment too, wasn't it? To see your family again? That must have been wonderful.
Yeah, it's amazing. For 4 years, I was dreaming about that moment. Sure.
One of the best feelings people can have is reunion after they've been apart, right? And that's a wonderful thing.
Yeah.
Sarah, let's talk about what you learned out of this experience and how it can be helpful to people going through other things. We talk about cancer. Here's one thing we talk about, but people go through all kinds of bad things, health issues, divorce. They go through financial reversals. There are people, you know, I talked a year or two ago to people involved with the Holocaust, the Jewish situation. There are bad things going on in the world right now where there's horrible things happening. But it sounds like you learned some lessons here and you decided to put it in a book. So let's talk about, why did you write your book, which is called How I Survived the Killing Fields, and who is it for?
Originally, I did not want to talk about my story. I did not want to write a book because I didn't realize that my book can help anybody. Just want to hide it. I want to just forget about it. But one day when I got invited to speak at the woman group, and during my talk, one woman cried, and I found out later that she remembered one of her teenage child took his life.
Hmm.
And that moment, I realized that I need to tell more of my story. Yeah. Because the person that took their life know how hard life can be. They may think twice about taking their own life.
Wow. So that's a wonderful testament to you gave that talk and people were moved by it. And so you decided to write the book. And I know you do speaking and do other things like that to be helpful to people. So who's this book for then? Is it for people like you mentioned in the woman who's heard your speech? Is that who it's for, folks like that?
For people that are struggling in life.
Okay.
That have been through trauma, some kind of trauma, but they cannot forget about trauma. They cannot move on with their life. That trauma drives them down. So I just want to give them hope that there is hope if you don't give up hope. Many of my readers, after they read my book, they told me that I give them hope.
I love what you just said there. There's hope even when you want to give up hope. Is that what you said? There's hope in spite of all the destructiveness, and you saw incredible pain and destructiveness and death and disease and everything, and there's still hope. So what do you think are some of the principles that you learned out of your experience that are helpful to people who are going through their own, you know, their own killing fields, if you allow me the analogy, their own problems? What are some of the things that you learned that could be helpful to other people?
One thing is very important, that we have to have love in our heart. In my case, my love for my family is very obvious, that I love my family. When you have that love, it becomes your purpose. When we live with a purpose, it's pretty difficult to give up on life because you have a purpose. In my case, my purpose is to go find my family. It direct me, guide me to not give up hope, to keep moving on, to keep going.
So that's so important to have a purpose. And you said your purpose, we have the emotion of love, which is in your purpose. And in this case, it was love for your family. So do you encourage people who maybe feel beat up by their tragedy and feel, I can't love again, or I can't have hope again? How do you help people find hope or find love or find purpose? Is there anything that we can do to help to rediscover that?
How to find love, to find purpose is look for something that made you feel happy, that you enjoy and you're passionate about. And when I built a relationship with my mom during her sickness, that's a kind of ground me. secure me in the, such a strong bond with my mom. We, other people might have something else that give them an idea of what can be their purpose, something that you are passionate about, that you enjoy, that made you feel alive.
Yeah, it sounds like it's so important to have something very tangible to look to or hope for or have purpose about. In this case, it was your care, not only your love of your mother, but your purposefulness and caretaking for her was important there. So it sounded to me you're encouraging people to really have something that they can really hang on to, something real to hang on to. Is that a fair way of looking at it?
Yeah. Another thing that I think in my case, I think my life is not just for me. My life is for my family. I have a serving heart. So My life is to serve my family, and my family serve me. They love me. So it's vice versa. And also, we have to forgive. It's easy for me to hold on to the grudge, to the anger and bitterness that they make my life miserable. But I look at it this way. I said, there's so many people die, and I'm so grateful that I still have my life and still have my love for my family.
What's the opposite of forgiveness is things like bitterness and hatred, and that's not helpful, is it? It really isn't. I'll just share briefly. I had the privilege of being around some people who were survivors of the Holocaust, and their key word is forgiveness, that they, survivors of the Nazi Jewish Holocaust, and that's what I'm hearing you say too, that love and forgiveness are powerful emotions, because that's what has to combat hatred and hurt and all that bad stuff that you experienced there. You got to combat it with good stuff, don't you?
Yes. And also another really important component is gratitude.
Gratitude, yes.
How can you find gratitude in the middle of the tragedy like that? No, we can find something.
Tell me, what was one thing you were grateful for even during, I think I can think of a couple of them, but you tell me, what was at least one thing you were grateful for even in the middle of your horrible time in the killing fields? What was one thing at least you were grateful for?
I'm grateful for my life, and I'm grateful for my friendship with my woman in the camp. And also I'm grateful that I have a loving family that keep me strong. When we have somebody love you, you become stronger because of that love. The power of the love made you feel stronger.
Power of love, the relationships, having a vision, the shoot to go for, some powerful things there. Tell me a little bit more about one more thing I would just want to go for, because you're describing one of the things we love to talk about and teach about here at Cancer and Comedy, and that is how to serve others with love. How do you think your book or your talks are now? You've mentioned how your family is so important to you. Has there also been a level now how your audience is important to you, the people who are hearing your message? And tell me if there's anybody out there, you mentioned one woman, is there any other stories you may have about people who are impacted by your book or by your message where there were some change that took place, some bitterness that may have been dealt with or something that they were able to deal with? Do you have any stories like that of how you've been able to be helpful?
I can share two stories.
Please.
One woman listened to my talk, and then I had an occasion to see her about 3 months later. And she called me up. She said, Sarah, good to see you at a gathering. And I said, oh, how do you know me? She said, I was in your audience. But not only that, you changed my life. And I said, how? She said, I have been suicidal all my life. But now I change. I no longer want to kill myself. I have this, hold on to this full-time job. I have my own apartment. I enjoy my life now.
That's wonderful. That's wonderful. You said you had another story?
Yeah, another story. When somebody in Chicago read my book, and she read about my relationship with my mom, and she herself did not have a good relationship with her mom. So she changed. She tried to make an effort to build a relationship with her mother. So now it's going so great, and she's so thankful that in my book I wrote about that. And she told me about that. So I am so grateful that now she had that bad relationship for a long time, and now she changed.
So you've had one person who was suicidal. At least you mentioned a couple of stories about there were people who were suicidal who changed that idea. And then you have a person who'd been able to repair their relationship with their mother. That's also wonderful. Let me bring it around to one more thought that I almost always ask people. Sometimes there's something called dark humor. When we're in the midst of bad things, something that just strikes us funny or whatever, even in the midst of some terrible things, either in your experience with the Killing Fields or otherwise, were there any situations that just made you smile or even laugh to think this is just so absurd or so crazy? Were there any episodes like that happened to you?
Yeah. When I escaped out of the jungle and found my family, my mom did not recognize me because I was just skin and bone.
Oh, my goodness.
And she pampered me with her good food, all natural, organic, no GMO and all that. So I enjoy her food and I keep eating. Yeah. And then I realized this, I'm going to be fat. I said, I'd rather be fat than skinny and
weak. There you go. Hey, it's all good at that point, isn't it? It's all good, right? And that's because that's the absurdity of the situation. The absurdity is your mother didn't recognize you really, because I assume you had gone through the experiences and you'd lost a lot of weight and just you've been beat up by life, literally. And she was going to get you better with her food, wasn't she?
Yes.
Isn't that wonderful? And it's wonderful to hear you laugh about that. And that's what I love to hear. When people think about the good things in life, in this case, your family, your mother feeding you good food, it just makes us smile and makes us laugh. And that makes us feel good too, doesn't it? To have that good memory. Let's just bring it around to this, Sarah. You're fascinating. What an incredible story. There's a lot of people out there right now who may want to pick up your book or hear this podcast episode or look at the other talks that you've done, and you're thinking, Sarah, I'm not doing so good myself. I've been through a disease, or I've been through a divorce, or I've been through a bad relationship with my mother. What is this something you would share with that woman who is going through that really tragic circumstances? What is it be a word of encouragement you might give to her, or a word of hope?
A word of hope is that look in your life. Look for somebody that really loves you. Find that true love, that strong love will help build you up, because the true love, it just made you stronger. And also, what I will say is that look for goodness in any situation. In any situation, you can always find some goodness. Let's say, I call it a reframe. Reframe your thinking.
Yes, reframe your thinking.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, go ahead, finish your thought.
Yeah, look for the goodness, for the blessing that come out from that circumstance. Right. You will find it.
So look for your true love and be grateful and look for the good things in that circumstance. Well, your book is called How I Survived the Killing Fields, A Story of Hope, Love, and Determination. Sarah, if people want to reach out to you, how can they do so? We'll put those notes in our show notes. How can they find out more about you?
The best way is to go to my website, sarahim.com. It's SARAIM.com. You will find my book, you'll find my topic that I speak about, some events that I host, and some other things.
Again, the book is How I Survived the Killing Fields. You can find her at sarahim.com. That's SARAIM.com. We'll put connections to that at our website, cancerandcomedy.com. It's a pleasure to have you with us. What a fascinating story. Sarah M., our guest today on the Cancer and Comedy Podcast.
Now let's lighten things up just a little bit by having our cancer and comedy segment, Dr. Brad's Bad Joke of the Day.
So this bride and groom were blissfully in love and couldn't wait to begin their life together. And the bride, she loved to ride horses, so they went to a Montana dude ranch for their honeymoon. One day, they decided to go out for a ride. And as the horses crossed a small stream, the man's horse slipped in and jostled him. When they reached the stream bank, the woman dismounted, walked over to the horse. Staring into his eyes, she said, "That's one." Then she remounted, and they continued on their ride. A little further along the way, the husband's horse stumbled while stepping over a fallen tree. The woman got down and, pointing her finger into the horse's face, said, "That's two." She returned to her saddle and they moved on. Later that afternoon, the man's horse got spooked by a snake in the path, reared back on its hind legs, throwing the man on the ground. And the woman quickly dismounted, stepped in front of the husband's horse and shouted, "That's three." Then she pulled out a pistol out of her pocket and shot the horse right behind between the eyes dead. The man, shocked at seeing the horse killed, said to his wife, "You maniac, how could you do such a thing?" The woman walked over to her husband, stared him directly into his eyes, and calmly said, "That's one."
Well, lifters, let's turn serious and turn to Dr. Brad's Faith It or Break It segment.
If you ever have heard the phrase, if you want to make God laugh, tell him your plans, then you're going to love this story I call the Easter Cat. You see, I retired from full-time ministry 43 years, 2 years ago. Then last year, I was dealing with cancer. I had cancer surgery just a few days before Easter, so that really absorbed my time. So this particular year is the first year I have not had responsibilities during Easter time in a very, very long time. As you might imagine, that's the busiest time for a pastor. So really enjoyed, my wife and I really enjoyed worshiping at church and enjoying Easter from the perspective of a parishioner. And I thought, God, this is okay, that I don't need to be preaching a sermon. I don't need to lead into worship. It's okay. And I actually was very relaxed and enjoyed it. But God had different plans. About 7 o'clock in the evening on Easter Sunday evening, I simply went out to take out the trash, and the neighbor, next door neighbor, was at her car, and her two children were with her, children about, little girl about 10 years old, little boy about 12, were very upset. Turns out their pet cat, Tiger, had died. And she called me over, and I went to see what was happening, and she asked me, "I understand you're a pastor, and if you would, please, would you say a prayer or do something for Tiger the cat?" And of course, I agreed. And I realized that God had different plans for me. I was going to lead an Easter service after all. The little girl involved was particularly upset, and she had lots of questions, like, will Tiger have any pain in heaven? Will Tiger the cat have friends in heaven? Will the cat be lonely in heaven? Who will take care of Tiger in heaven? Will my cat recognize me? And those are questions a lot of people have, don't they? And I think that's relevant. I was able to talk a little bit with her about the reunion in heaven that people can have. There is there is an understanding in Christian theology about the joyful things we have here in life will be there for us in heaven. Explain a little bit about that. But of course, we're talking about grief here for a little 10-year-old girl. And, the boy and the mom were broken up too. They really loved that cat. A little bit about the old movie, maybe you've heard of it, All Dogs Go to Heaven, where a little orphan girl takes care of a little dog named Charlie, and they have adventures together. But eventually, Charlie actually sacrifices his life to help Annabelle out and save her. So there's some things that we can remember, and remember the joyful things about those things that are a part of our life, including our pets. And I think that's an important thing. There's a theme of redemption we can talk about, the theme of friendship, the theme of a special bond between humans and their animals. That's all important. And I just want us to remember those things. In Revelation 21:4, it says, he will wipe away all your tears, and death shall be no more. There'll be no more mourning, nor crying, nor pain. So what's the opposite of that? What's the opposite of mourning, crying, and pain? Joy. Joy. That's what heaven is going to be about. And of course, the Easter story itself is all about overcoming death and new life and resurrection. and the celebration that took place and the almost the disbelief of it that takes place. And, you know, Jesus talked to the women who came to the tomb, why do you weep? What are you looking for here? And so that's some of the things that they have in a moment, our aha moment. The women who came to the tomb, Mary and Mary came to the tomb. They realized that something dramatic had happened. Then they had their moment of recognition about what was going on. Then they understood that reunion is taking place. And that brought relief and tears and, I believe, a smile and a burst of energy that is there. So my message here today is that God has a sense of humor and that things don't always go as we expect them to. And certainly, if you have a diagnosis of cancer or death in the family, or even a death of a cat, it's not expected. It hurts. It's painful. But God can use those things, just like God used my sense of relief of not leading a worship service on Easter Sunday. He said, okay, Brad, we're going to do something different here. You're going to have a funeral for a cat. And so that's what we did. And so I just want to share with you that there is a place here for whatever you're looking for. And part of turning, as we like to say here in our podcast, turn the grim to a grin, is also turning the weeping to a sense of satisfaction, reunion and resurrection, and that aha moment of recognition that a new thing is happening. So I think we had a memorable Easter for me to have God teach me a lesson about expectation and realization that God can work in all kinds of ways and even turn weeping into joy. That's our faith it or break it moment.
Well, Lifter Uppers, this brings us to the close of this episode of the Cancer and Comedy Podcast with Dr. Brad Miller. Cancer and Comedy is all about telling uplifting stories of people like you who are kicking cancer's butt with healing through help and humor. You can join those of us who are turning the grim into grins by telling us your uplifting stories. Just go to cancerandcomedy.com/voicemessage. Well, that's it for now. Please join us next time on Cancer and Comedy. And if you like what you heard, please pass the podcast on to someone in your life who needs to turn their grim into a grin. For Dr. Brad Miller, I'm Deb Creer, reminding you that a cheerful heart is good medicine.
Hey, thanks for joining us on the Cancer and Comedy Podcast with Dr. Brad Miller. Make sure you visit our website, cancerandcomedy.com, where you can follow the show and get our newsletter, Like What You Hear? Then tell a friend about Cancer and Comedy, the show that lifts your spirits with hope and humor that heals. Until next time, keep turning the grim into a grin.